Hello, and welcome to Fathoming Water. I'm your host, Melissa Mosey. And happy Thanksgiving, everybody. This is our Thanksgiving special episode, and we talk with Brian Wong this week, who is the president of BKW Farms, and it's a fascinating discussion about how all the food that you will be eating today makes it to your table, and how water is involved in all of that. A big thanks to Diana Liverman for last week's episode. We started to understand the global connections of water and resources throughout the world in that episode. And in this episode with Brian Wong, we will understand even more how our global food systems and our global water systems are completely interconnected through the economy and through weather and climate as well. Brian Wong is a third-generation farmer working at BKW Farms in Marana, Arizona. The first crop was planted there in 1939, and the story behind it you will find amazing. It is a big piece of Arizona history. Brian graduated from the University of Arizona in 2011 with a major in agricultural economics and management. He sits as a chairperson on the Citizens Water Advisory Committee and is a board member with SAWA, the Southern Arizona Water Users Association, representing BKW Farms and agricultural interests. I hope you enjoy today's episode. I hope you have a great Thanksgiving, and I hope you take a moment to be grateful for the food that has made it to your table today. It is through the work and efforts of people like Brian, who are taking a great deal of risk, as we will find out, to get that food to your table. And now, Brian Wong. Okay, today I'm here with Brian Wong from BKW Farms.
Yes.
President of BKW
Farms.
Yes, I
am.
Excellent. So the reason that you are here today is because you participated in the Sustainable Water for Southern Arizona Community Forum.
Yes.
And you represented the agricultural sector.
Yes.
And so the other reason is just to explain how water works in farming. So let's start out with you participated in the forum. Why do you feel it is important for the general public to be informed about water, and especially in the agricultural sector?
I think there's a lot of people who don't understand about water and farming use. I know a lot of people have the concept that, oh, those farmers, they just throw a bunch of water out there and something pops up and grows. And they believe that farms can always be more efficient through new technologies or practice. But in reality, ever since the 1980s Groundwater Management Act from Arizona passed, farms have really been forced to be efficient with their water use from that point forward. From personal experience, our farm, once that act was passed, we actually started to laser level all of our lands and concrete line all of our ditches just to improve the water efficiencies on our farm.
Now, what was the pressure that forced you to do that? Was it that you were restricted in how much water you could pump?
Correct. Once that act was put into place, it put a limit on how much water we were allowed to withdraw from the ground. And at that time, we were entirely on groundwater, but once the CAP came through, we switched to that when we had the opportunity. But even using the CAP water, we're still only allowed to use a certain amount of water on our farmland.
Okay. So let's talk about BKW Farms. You're out of Marana?
Yes.
How large is your farming operation?
We grow about 45 to 5,000 acres of cropland. We have about another 15,000 acres of grazing land.
Is that a large farm, or an average-sized farm?
For the area, it's pretty large. I guess comparing it to farms throughout the U.S., it actually is on a very large scale. Because if you go back to the Midwest, a lot of family farms are maybe 100 acres, 500 acres. They can work with that just because of the different economics, what they grow, basically where they get their water from, since they're all on a rainfall. Mm. Whereas a larger farm down here in the Southwest needs to have a lot more acres to be able to make it, basically.
Well, what type of crops do you grow?
The main crops grown in the Marana area is cotton, and then there's also winter wheats that are planted. A lot of farmers are doing corn for silage feed, and there's also alfalfa and specialty crops here and there when people like to gamble.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay. So that's what's fascinating about farming to me, is that a lot of it is a gamble.
Yes.
You've got to rely on weather. You've got to rely on the economy.
Yes.
How do you protect yourself as a farmer from those risks?
Unfortunately, there's not a whole lot you can do for protection. The best thing to do is always try to grow on a contract. Someone gives you a contract to buy it, you know the price, and you know how much you have to produce, so that's always basically the safest way. There's always crop insurance that you can purchase for natural weather events that destroy crops, but if you can't do either of those, it's basically a big risk on what you do. Back in the 70s, we tried growing lettuce, and we did that for about 10 years. For 9 out of those 10 years, we lost money. But on that 10th year, there was a major weather event in other parts of Arizona where it destroyed people's crops, but not ours. So we were able to turn a profit on that crop to cover even the losses for the previous 9 years. So a lot of it's luck and timing and global events that really drive what the price of the crop will be.
So I think that really brings up a good point, is that a lot of people don't realize that the agricultural sector is very risky. It's not like going to work and having your 40-hour job.
As we progress through time and basically trade, it is a global economy on farm commodities. What China does or South America does affects what the price is here in the United States.
That's incredible. Okay, so let's talk about some of the specifics. You mentioned laser leveling land.
Yes.
What is that?
Laser leveling land is you want to try to make sure that your crop land is at the same grade, kind of sloping away from your watering source. That way you're able to get a more even watering across the field instead of the water ponding in one spot in the field, or if there's too much grade, it all rushes to one end and blows out the end of the field and all the water just leaks off.
Oh, that makes sense. And so I'm assuming you're using tractors.
Yes.
And then where does the laser come in?
Basically, you have a stationary point that measures the height of the ground at that point.
Okay.
Usually, you'll put one at one corner and put one at the opposite corner, and then you'll have an even grade starting from one corner to the other corner so that your water will flow evenly across and to the corners of the field.
Oh, that's interesting. So this is flood irrigation?
Yes.
Okay.
It's actually called level basin irrigation.
Okay.
And once you start laser leveling it, you do have a even plane, so that's where the level basin comes in.
I love it.
But yes, we do use furrowed crops and irrigation hoses to water our lands out there in Marana.
Okay. And so what do you think about the future of drip irrigation?
Drip irrigation is a very good water efficiency technique. Unfortunately, it takes a long payback period.
Mm.
So yes, you can save a lot of water with it, but you have to put a lot of initial investment into it. One reason we really haven't gone into drip irrigation, a lot of our land that we farm on is actually Arizona state lease, and there's always that looming thing of development coming out towards Marana. So if we invest all the money into a drip irrigation system, and then a couple years later, state land decides they want to sell off that piece for development, we basically put in a lot of money and didn't get it back in return.
Oh, now that's really interesting. Is leasing land from the state common for farming operations?
Yes, it is very common, especially here in Arizona.
So there's always a threat of why would you spend money and investment on
yes, that,
a lot of farms?
That is true. You can always know where the development's going to go. If you're out in the middle of the desert and there's no speck of development around you, it's going to be a low risk thing. But I mean, Marana is growing, and there's always housing developments going in around our cropland. And we have had some pieces bought out from us that were put into development.
Oh, interesting. Okay, so let's talk about crops. Okay. So you said pima or cotton.
Yes.
And is it pima cotton?
Yes. Yes, that's the variety that's grown a lot.
Now, why is that variety grown so commonly here?
Basically, pima cotton is a very high-quality cotton. It can really be grown anywhere, but what the advantage we have in a desert environment is less pest pressure because of the drier environment, so they don't have a humid environment to grow. And then also with irrigating your fields and not relying on any kind of weather, you're able to target how much water you can put on your crop instead of waiting for the next rainfall. So that's the reason pima cotton is grown around here, just because you have a lot more control over the inputs that go into the crop.
So do you manage the choices of your crops based on your water allocation every year?
Not really. It's more of what we've grown historically, and farmers can't ever get out of their system on what their dads used to do. So that's basically why we stuck with cotton and wheat. And it does grow here very well. And like I said, just because of the dry environment, we don't have a lot of the pest problems that you would see in other more humid places.
One more reason why farming exists. People often go, why does farming exist in Arizona? Well, we have two seasons of growing, correct?
Yes.
And less pest problems,
yes.
Molds, things
yes.
like that don't
yes.
happen.
Yes, that's another big thing that you'll see with wheat crops in a rainy environment are molds or funguses that grow on there, but we rarely see that here in Arizona.
So you talk about family, and it really is, farming is really a family
yes.
project. You hand it down from one generation to the next. Why do you think that is?
Usually when a farm starts, they always want to keep on farming, and they always want their family to take on the legacy, take on the farm to make sure that it prospers. That's one thing that we are running into at the farm. I'm the youngest one out there, and the kids in my generation really didn't take an interest in going and working at the farm, and they all basically moved away from the farm and living in different cities, got their degrees in different areas. So we're not too sure what we're going to do going into the future, since I'm basically the last one out there. Maybe some of the next generation want to come back and farm. That's to wait to be seen.
I think it's important to get an interest in farming and to help people understand where their food comes from. Because
yes.
a lot of younger people that I've spoken with have no concept of how food is grown or where it's grown or the pressures that are put on rural America to supply the food. Do you, as the president of your farm, interact with other farmers and the state in dealing with water issues?
We interact with a lot of the farmers in the local area. There really isn't that many different farmers in Marana. There's four or five big family farmers out there, and they've been out there basically just as long as we have, and we all get along pretty well. We do talk about water issues, basically water security, and to make sure that we have water going out into the future.
So when you have an issue with your CAP delivery, who do you call?
For the water delivery, we actually have our own pumps on the CAP canal.
Okay.
And we go through our own delivery systems. So basically that part of it is all on us to make sure that that part's running.
Okay.
But we really haven't had a problem with reliability on how much water we can or cannot get.
Do you have a representative that represents you to CAP?
Southern Arizona Water Users Association.
Yeah.
Yes, we're a part of that as well. But the way that we get our water from the CAP is a lot of our farm, or basically all of our farm, is what's called a groundwater savings facility. We are allowed to use the municipality's allotment on the CAP, like Tucson Water or Marana or Metro, and they've all signed contracts with us. We basically take their allotment, their water, and use it to irrigate our crops with. And in return, they gain a long-term storage credit from the water that we did not pump from the ground. So they get to have that water, basically that acre foot of water that we use from their allotment to water, but they get to keep that credit underground.
That is something that I'm sure a lot of people struggle with, the idea of how the credit system works.
Yes, yes, it's very complicated.
But it's all based on contracts. It's
yes.
saying we're using this instead of pumping, so in the future the cities can pump groundwater if need be
yes.
when CAP water is possibly
yes.
cut off.
Yes, and we have a lot of grandfather water rights out there, and that's what we're basically exchanging on that yearly basis, is we get to use the CAP water in return. Those municipalities gain that credit underground for a future use.
And when you say grandfathered water rights, what
yes.
does that mean?
That was determined by the 1980s Act and how much water we used historically before that time. And then the state of Arizona assigned us basically a water duty on how much water we're allowed to use on a per acre basis for certain plots of farming land.
How long has your family been farming this area?
My grandfather started the farm in 1939.
1939,
yes.
And has it grown substantially since then?
Yes, I can give you the whole story behind the farm.
Oh, sure.
My great-grandfather came to the Arizona, New Mexico, California area to work on the railroad back in the early 1900s. And after he did that for a while, he decided to open up a grocery store in downtown Tucson, basically right where the convention center is right now. That used to be what was called Chinatown. But he brought his family over from China after he opened up the grocery store. So my grandfather worked there with the rest of his siblings. And he actually used to drive a pickup truck filled with groceries out to southern Tucson, to the Indian reservations, and up into the Marana, Red Rock, Eloy area to deliver groceries out there, since there weren't any grocery stores in the area. And so as he did that, he saw a lot of farming operations. Basically, that's who he delivered the groceries to. So he became interested in that, and he saved up enough money to buy land up in the Red Rock area in 1939. He really didn't know what he was doing. He planted what was basically grown in this region, which was wheat and some produces. In the early 40s, he decided to try a new crop around here called cotton, and that really wasn't being grown in this area. A lot of it was in California or in the Yuma area, but not here in Marana. 1941, he planted his first crop, didn't know what he was doing. Generally, you plant cotton in about March, April time. He didn't plant till June. Usually, you harvest cotton around October, November time. Well, come December, Pearl Harbor happened. He still had cotton in the ground since it was late, and overnight the cotton was basically declared a wartime commodity, going from about 8 cents a pound to over a dollar. And since he was the only one left with cotton in the ground, I mean, that's basically dumb luck.
Oh my gosh.
So he used all that money that he gained on the crop that year to invest in more land for farming.
Oh, how funny. Sometimes mistakes in
yes.
becoming the best solutions.
Yeah.
Wow, that is a cool story.
Yeah, and it was all pure luck. And you couldn't have ever planned something like that.
Going forward into the future, do you see your farm's water use? Do you see it growing? Do you see it diminishing? Do you see higher efficiency? What are your concerns about things like shortage on the CAP?
Yes, we are constantly seeing more efficiency. And actually, over these years, we have seen a lot less water use than we have in the past, which is to be expected with efficiencies. Basically, the variety of crop is where you'll see a lot of water usage. If you grow something that's really not native to the area or that demands a lot of water, yes, you are going to use a lot of water. But if you're using something that is more native or something that has been basically genetically modified to use less water, that's where you'll see a lot of water efficiencies coming up. As for the reliability of our water source, since we are using the municipality's water credits and demand, we're kind of protected with the basically first level tier of shortage. For some of it, we do have water that are in the ag pools, and that will be affected by the first level of shortage. So either we can appeal to get more water from the municipalities, or we'll have to plant less acres because we have to work with that finite water budget.
And do you have a political representative for all of ag that argues on the behalf of agricultural water?
Not really. We basically do everything internally. And we have a really good relationship with these municipalities. And they understand where we're coming from, and they're supportive of what we've been doing in the past. So hopefully we can continue that good relationship.
That's great. Now, the future of GMOs, it's touchy subject, of course.
Yes.
But yet, as you're saying, as water supplies are more threatened or more variable weather events, where do you see the future of GMOs going?
There have been multiple studies about GMO versus growing the original seed of that crop versus something in between, hybridization. And the reality is, if it weren't for GMOs or hybridization of crops, we would have been starving a long time ago just because of the amount of population on the whole planet. So that's one thing that a lot of people have to realize. We actually are doing some organic farming, basically in a wheat variety that is local to the region, and that's another project that we're trying to do. But going into the future in regards to water use, the cotton that we're growing now is genetically modified, and it has been genetically modified for a shorter growing season, but yet the same yield or even a higher yield. So in regards to that, it does use less water, and yet you still get the same amount of cotton out of that plant.
If not more,
yes.
It's a way to buffer yourself from risk.
Yes, but kind of give an example, we've been having a lot of storms this season from El Nino, from what everyone keeps on saying, and the worst thing for a cotton crop is hail, because the boll will develop on the plant, but when it hails, it'll actually knock it off the plant. Or if it hits that boll, it'll actually bruise it and damage it. So this year we have had some hail damage. But that gets back to crop insurance. As long as you have that, you're kind of protected against the lower yields that you'll be receiving when it comes time to harvest.
Okay. So the futures on the stock market about certain crops, that's all based on those contracts that people are contracting.
Some of it. And like I said, a lot of global demand drives what the price of those contracts are as well. Mm-hmm. If there's a lot of supply in the system, like cotton, your prices aren't going to go high. And it's unfortunate to say this, but it really takes a natural catastrophe to drive the prices back up.
Okay, so there's a lot of cotton grown. Cotton's
yes.
A fairly low-value crop at this point?
At this point, yes, it is. The price is kind of low, around the 50 to 60 cent area, which I guess is about a little less than average, what you see. But just a few years ago, cotton was over a dollar, and that was because a lot of crops were destroyed in the Asia countries because of typhoons over there, not hurricanes.
What that just really makes the point about how this is a global issue.
Yes.
Like, we've been talking with some other policy people, and they tend to focus a lot on the region and thinking about water resources as a region, but you really bring home the point that it really is a global issue, especially tied together through agriculture and demand.
Yeah, and we're really a commercial farm, and we have a lot of acres to grow these things. The organic project that we're doing, we're trying to keep that more local, but that's only like a 20 to 30 acre plot, whereas the other 4,000 acres, that's more than enough to even supply this area if there was ever a demand for it. But basically everything that we grow on the commercial scale is shipped overseas.
Yeah,
a lot of it doesn't stay here in the States.
That's a point that was brought up, is that often, people are moving water by moving crops overseas.
Yes.
And I will have to delve into that as this podcast develops, because it is kind of an interesting concept to see. I bet you're able to see water in things a lot more than other people because of your background.
Yeah, well, you need water for anything. My grandfather always said if there isn't water on the land, it's basically worthless because you can't really do anything without water.
Right? Yeah, but you don't even think like, oh, this shirt is made of water. Yeah. A lot of water goes into this shirt. Are you worried about climate change?
Not so much, because we are on an irrigated farm and we do put the water on. And even if it's really hot during the summer times, cotton loves the heat. It thrives in the heat. It's a good hot weather plant. So not to say we should be going up in temperature, but the crops that we're growing, higher temperatures really won't affect it at all, if not make it even a better crop.
Okay. But, and what about more storms or more violence?
The violent storms is something to consider going into the future. But like I said, you can't really predict if this year is going to have a bad storm that destroys the crop versus not have a bad storm. But it does increase the chances.
The unpredictability risks. Is the thing that could affect you the most.
Yes.
And then how concerned are you about storage shortage on the Colorado River?
It is something to be watching, and we are even trying to do our part in making sure that doesn't happen. CAP offered an agricultural forbearance program. If you wanted to participate in it, you would actually lower the amount of CAP allocation that you receive through the ag pool, which we do receive some, and we did participate in the event or in the program, and they in turn will leave that water in Lake Mead, which will help basically prevent a shortage or push it off even further to the future. And an incentive we received from that was a lower price water per acre foot from CAP.
Okay, so you take less, but you get charged less.
Basically, okay. Yeah, for the remaining amount that you have from the CAP.
Okay. What did you think of the Sustainable Water for Southern Arizona Community Forum? What was your take from that?
I thought it was a good event, and it's always good to speak to the public and water issues, but it's always good to see basically water users and water providers trying to talk about the issues on a public forum like that.
What do you think of the new plan that's being proposed, the strategic vision plan that Tom Buschatsky brought up, where different regions of the state are going to be treated differently based on problems and possible outcomes and solutions?
I think it's a very good solution. You don't want to try to make a water law or rule that affects the whole state when it might not apply to a certain region. So it's always good to get, especially water issues, on a regional level because it will be more specific to that region itself.
How are your farming operations managed differently inside of an AMA versus a farmer that's outside of an AMA?
Like I said, that 1980s Groundwater Management Act only affects established AMAs. So if you're actually outside an AMA, there is no limit on how much groundwater you can pump. There are no restrictions on how much water you can use. And that's one thing that the Wilcox area is going through right now because they are not in an AMA. And a lot of farmers from outside the state are moving over towards that area to start farming.
Yeah. Other people have brought this up, the Wilcox area and the
San Simone area.
San Simone area. What exactly is going on over there?
From what we've heard, and I'm not an expert on the subject at all, that a lot of farmers from California are actually moving over to the Wilcox area to start establishing their farms over there since there's more water available in the Wilcox area versus over there in California. So that's what a lot of the big news stories are about right now. There's basically pros and cons to what's happening. A lot of the people in the Wilcox area are actually liking this move because it actually makes their land more valuable. It brings more jobs to the area. It brings more money to the area. But on the other side, it's going to drain the water resources in that area a lot faster than what they used to be. So the Arizona Department of Water, and you've heard that they're trying to do something in that area, whether turning it into its own AMA or into an irrigation district, which places some limits on how much groundwater can be pumped.
What do you think is the most important thing about the agricultural industry that the general public should know?
Basically, that there is a connect between farming and then the food they eat. We've participated for the past few years in Tucson Meet Yourself, which is a local community event, and we had a farming exhibit on display, basically about our organic farming project. And we had a bucket of wheat in there, basically straight from the field. And a lot of people have never seen raw wheat before, let alone that they know that this wheat is actually grounded up and milled into flour. Everyone knows what flour is, but they didn't understand that this is what flour comes from. And they didn't even know what a wheat plant really even looked like. So that's always good in our eyes to see people learning, but also kind of scary to know that people don't understand that these are actually grown in the ground. It just doesn't come from some place that they don't even know about.
So. I had a friend once who did not realize that scallions were onions.
Yeah.
So it really is. And this is a very reasonable, smart person. And I was stunned. And it really, there is such an incredible disconnect between the way the people see food and the people realize.
It seems like foods that need to be processed or manufactured are the ones that seem most disconnected. And everyone knows what an apple tree is. You get an apple and you can eat it right off of it. But like a cotton plant, they don't know that that bowl of cotton needs to be further refined and processed to be turned into the clothes that they wear.
Why did you start the organic growing process of the wheat, of the four, what did you say, how many acres? 40 acres?
Yeah, about 40 acres. We're kind of looking for something new. Basically something to get more local into Tucson or Arizona. We weren't really too sure. And we wanted to try to do something that was native to the region. So we actually partnered up with Native Seed Search. And they recommended a wheat variety to us, which was White Sonora Wheat, which, as the story goes, Father Kino brought it with him over to the area when he came and settled down there and south of Tucson. And so this wheat variety has actually been here for quite a while, and it's considered a heritage grain. So we decided to give that a shot, and the seed we received from Native Seed Search was organic certified. So we went through the USDA organic certified process for the land that we have that the wheat's grown on, and then also for us to package and handle the wheat as well.
Is that a complicated process?
It's not overly complicated. It's just that there's a lot of paperwork involved and a lot of documentation involved. And you have to make sure that it's all up to snuff, because they can always come and do a surprise inspection. And there is also an annual inspection that they do every year to make sure that we're in compliance with the rules and regulations of the organic certification.
Oh, that's fascinating. So the product that is made from that wheat, is that sold at Native Seed Search?
No, we're actually selling it through ourselves or through some local vendors that we have. We did return the seed that we took from them and also even doubled the amount of seed that we got from them. And they were happy, and we did public events with them, and we've tried growing some other experiment crops with them as well. So we're in contact with them as well.
Oh, that sounds like a great partnership.
Yeah.
As a farmer, what do you see as the best protection for rural America?
And that's always a big question, and that's also a big topic in the California area right now. Not so much in the Arizona, as our water laws are basically totally different. But is water on agriculture the best use versus population growth? And that's always a big subject with people and what their opinions are with it. It's kind of right there in your face about agriculture. If you don't have the water resources, you can't grow the crops, whether it be actually for food or cotton, which is for manufacturing into other products. But another drawback into that is, since agriculture and the things they produce is such a global market, will people miss farms here in Arizona in particular? Probably not, because they can always just buy it from some other country. But if you want to try to keep agriculture more local here in the States versus trying to get it from somewhere else in the world, that's another question that people need to ask themselves.
Well, there is the local movement, trying to eat and buy things within 100 miles of your home. Do you see value in that?
Yes, we're actually seeing a lot of value in that for our organic project that we're doing. When we first started that project, we thought that a lot of the consumers that we would get would actually use it for consumption, eating it. But what actually turned out is a lot of the breweries here in Tucson and Phoenix have actually taken to that product. Not so much that it's in the organic sense, but more that it's in the local sense. And the taste that it gives off is very unique, and a lot of people have actually really liked it.
That's incredible. So if you love beer, support your local farmers. Well, I like how you're diversifying, that you are, that you're still, you know, part of the whole global market, that you're producing crops that are distributed worldwide and for industrial uses, but yet at the same time, you're producing foods that are for local consumption or organic and for the smaller regional things. And so that's another way to hedge risk, I would assume, is that kind of diversity.
Yes. As the more you can diversify your business, the more you'll be padded against risk. If one thing fails, you can always fall back on another thing. We're really trying to push more of the local sense and what we're growing here locally. It's always hard to find a big demand for it, especially when we're trying to grow it on a commercial scale instead of just gardening in your backyard. And I see the future for our local senses with these breweries. And we've actually grown a malting barley, and we're trying to partner up with some other companies here to get the barley malted so that we can also provide that locally as well. Because these breweries here in the Tucson area are always trying to look to make a 100% locally beer. And they really see a lot of value in that.
Oh, that's fantastic. If there was one last question, if there was shortage on the Colorado to the point where we reach the 1025 level, where it's dramatic shortage, where it basically would be cut off, you would have to go back to groundwater pumping, right?
Yes, if we wanted to continue our agriculture or growing, we would need to switch back to groundwater. And we do have every right to do that, but that's something that I'm always trying to push off, because it isn't a viable source of water for a long-term solution. I'm using a renewable source of water is always your best bet for going into the future.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Brian Wong.
You're really welcome.
Appreciate you coming in. I hope you enjoyed our episode today with Brian Wong, speaking about the risk that is inherent in farming. It really is fascinating to understand the economic risk, the risk of weather events that farmers undertake and try to mitigate in order to make sure that food makes it to the table, whether that be organic food and organic wheat for brewing beer locally, which was a fascinating thing to learn. A big thanks to Brian Wong. We certainly appreciate him coming in and taking the time to share with you how farming happens in Arizona. Next week, we're going to be talking with Warren Tenney. Warren Tenney is the Assistant General Manager for the Metro Water District, where he's worked since 1994. In 2014, he was reelected to a second six-year term to represent Pima County on the board of the Central Arizona Project. He's currently Vice President of the CAP Board, and he serves as Chairman of the Finance, Audit, and Power Committee. Warren Tenney was active in the formation of the Water Conservation Alliance of Southern Arizona, Water CASA, and the Southern Arizona Water Users Association, SAWA. He is currently the president of SAWA. He participated on the Water Resources Development Commission, serving as co-chair of the Environmental Working Group. He is also a member of the Arizona Water Association and has chaired the Water Resources Committee for 6 years. Warren Tenney also participated in the Sustainable Water for Southern Arizona Community Forum. This is one of several follow-up interviews, including this one that you just heard, to that Community Water Forum. We hope to speak with all 7 of the panelists as the series moves forward. Thank you so much, and tune in for our next episode with Warren Tenney. I hope you've had a great Thanksgiving. Thanks to Chris Levesque for our theme music, A Walk in the Wasteland. Thanks to KXCI, and thanks to you for listening. I'm your host, Melissa Mosey. I hope you have a great holiday weekend.